There was a knock on the door, and two waiters wheeled in a cart covered with food and silver service coffee pots. They took a portable table from the bottom of the cart and set it up. Then Johnny dismissed them. They sat at the table and ate the hot sandwiches Lucy had ordered and drank the coffee. Johnny leaned back and lit up a cigarette. "So you save lives. How come you became an abortionist?" Lucy spoke up for the first time. "He wanted to help girls in trouble, girls who might commit suicide or do something dangerous to get rid of the baby." Jules smiled at her and sighed. "It's not that simple. I became a surgeon, finally. I've got the good hands, as ballplayers say. But I was so good I scared myself silly. I'd open up some poor bastard's belly and know he was going to die. I'd operate and know that the cancer or tumor would come back, but I'd send them off home with a smile and a lot of bullshit. Some poor broad comes in and I slice off one tit. A year later she's back and I slice off the other tit. A year after that, I scoop out her insides like you scoop the seeds out of a cantaloupe. After all that, she dies anyway. Meanwhile, husbands keep calling up and asking, 'What do the tests show? What do the tests show?' So I hired an extra secretary to take all those calls. I saw the patient only when she was fully prepared for examination, tests, or operation. I spent the minimum possible time with the victim because I was, after all, a busy man. And then finally, I'd let the husband talk to me for 2 minutes. 'It's terminal,' I'd say. And they could never hear that last word. They understood what it meant, but they never heard it. I thought at first that unconsciously I was dropping my voice on the last word, so I consciously said it louder, but still they never heard it. One guy even said, 'What the hell do you mean it's germinal?' Jules started to laugh. 'Terminal, terminal, what the hell?' I started to do abortions. Nice and easy, everybody happy, like washing the dishes and leaving a clean sink. That was my class. I loved it. I loved being an abortionist. I don't believe that a 2-month fetus is a human being, so no problems there. I was helping young girls and married women who were in trouble. I was making good money. I was out of the front lines. When I got caught, I felt like a deserter that had been hauled in. But I was lucky. A friend pulled some strings and got me off, but now the big hospitals won't let me operate. So here I am, giving good advice again, which is being ignored, just like in the old days." "I'm not ignoring it," Johnny Fontaine said. "I'm thinking it over." Lucy finally changed the subject. "What are you doing in Vegas, Johnny? Relaxing from your duties as big-time Hollywood wheel or working?" Johnny shook his head. "Mike Corleone wants to see me and have a talk. He's flying in tonight with Tom Hagen. Tom said they'll be seeing you, Lucy. You know what it's all about?" Lucy shook her head. "We're all having dinner together tomorrow night. Freddie, too. I think it might have something to do with the hotel. The casino has been dropping money lately, which shouldn't be. The Don might want Mike to check it out." "I hear Mike finally got his face fixed," Johnny said. Lucy laughed. "I guess Kay talked him into it. He wouldn't do it when they were married. I wonder why. It looked so awful and made his nose drip. He should have had it done sooner." She paused for a moment. "Jules was called in by the Corleone family for that operation. They used him as a consultant and an observer." Johnny nodded and said dryly, "I recommended him for it." "Oh," Lucy said. "Anyway, Mike said he wanted to do something for Jules. That's why he's having us to dinner tomorrow night." Jules said musingly, "He didn't trust anybody. He warned me to keep track of what everybody did. It was fairly straight, ordinary surgery. Any competent man could do it." There was a sound from the bedroom of the suite, and they looked toward the drapes. Nino had become conscious again. Johnny went and sat on the bed. Jules and Lucy went over to the foot of the bed. Nino gave them a wan grin. "Okay, I'll stop being a wise guy. I feel really lousy. Johnny, remember about a year ago? What happened when we were with those two broads down in Palm Springs? I swear to you, I wasn't jealous about what happened. I was glad. You believe me, Johnny?" Johnny said reassuringly. Sure, Nino. I believe you. Lucy and Jules looked at each other. From everything they had heard and knew about Johnny Fontaine, it seemed impossible that he would take a girl away from a close friend like Nino. And why was Nino saying he wasn't jealous a year after it happened? The same thought crossed both their minds, that Nino was drinking himself to death romantically because a girl had left him to go with Johnny Fontaine. Jules checked Nino again. I'll get a nurse to be in the room with you tonight, Jules said. You really have to stay in bed for a couple of days. No kidding. Nino smiled. Okay, Doc, just don't make the nurse too pretty. Jules made a call for the nurse, and then he and Lucy left. Johnny sat in a chair near the bed to wait for the nurse. Nino was falling asleep again, an exhausted look on his face. Johnny thought about what he had said, about not being jealous about what had happened over a year ago with those two broads down in Palm Springs. The thought had never entered his head that Nino might be jealous. A year ago, Johnny Fontaine had sat in his plush office, the office of the movie company he headed, and felt as lousy as he had ever felt in his life. Which was surprising, because the first movie he had produced, with himself as star and Nino in a featured part, was making tons of money. Everything had worked. Everybody had done their job. The picture was brought in under budget. Everybody was going to make a fortune out of it, and Jack Waltz was losing 10 years of his life. Now Johnny had two more pictures in production, one starring himself, one starring Nino. Nino was great on the screen as one of those charming, dopey lover boys that women love to shove between their tits. Little boy lost. Everything he touched made money. It was rolling in. The Godfather was getting his percentage through the bank, and that made Johnny feel really good. He had justified his Godfather's faith. But today, that wasn't helping much. And now that he was a successful independent movie producer, he had as much power, maybe more, than he had ever had as a singer. Beautiful broads fell all over him just like before, though for a more commercial reason. He had his own plane. He lived more lavishly, even, with the special tax benefits a businessman had that artists didn't get. And what the hell was bothering him? He knew what it was. The front of his head hurt, his nasal passages hurt, his throat itched. The only way he could scratch and relieve that itch was by singing, and he was afraid to even try. He had called Jules Siegel about it, when it would be safe to try to sing, and Jules had said any time he felt like it. So he tried and sounded so hoarse and lousy he'd given up, and his throat would hurt like hell the next day, hurt in a different way than before the warts had been taken off. Hurt worse, burning. He was afraid to keep singing, afraid that he'd lose his voice forever or ruin it. And if he couldn't sing, what the hell was the use of everything else? Everything else was just bullshit. Singing was the only thing he really knew. Maybe he knew more about singing and his kind of music than anybody else in the world. He was that good, he realized now. All those years had made him a real pro. Nobody could tell him the right and the wrong. He didn't have to ask anybody. He knew. What a waste. What a damn waste. It was Friday, and he decided to spend the weekend with Virginia and the kids. He called her up, as he always did, to tell her he was coming. Really, to give her a chance to say no. She never said no. Not in all the years they had been divorced. Because she would never say no to a meeting of her daughters and their father. What a broad, Johnny thought. He'd been lucky with Virginia, and though he knew he cared more about her than any other woman he knew, it was impossible for them to live together sexually. Maybe when they were 65, like when you retire, they'd retire together, retire from everything. But reality shattered these thoughts when he arrived there and found Virginia was feeling a little grouchy herself, and the two girls not that crazy to see him, because they had been promised a weekend visit with some girlfriends on a California ranch where they could ride horses. He told Virginia to send the girls off to the ranch and kiss them goodbye with an amused smile. He understood them so well. What kid wouldn't rather go riding horses on a ranch and hang around with a grouchy father who picked his own spots as a father. He said to Virginia, "I'll have a few drinks and then I'll shove off, too." "All right," she said. She was having one of her bad days, rare but recognizable. It wasn't too easy for her leading this kind of life. She saw him taking an extra-large drink. "What are you cheering yourself up for?" Virginia asked. "Everything is going so beautifully for you. I never dreamed you had it in you to be such a good businessman." Johnny smiled at her. "That's not so hard," he said. At the same time, he was thinking, so that's what was wrong. He understood women, and he understood now that Virginia was down because she thought he was having everything his own way. Women really hated seeing their men doing too well. It irritated them. It made them less sure of the hold they exerted over them through affection, sexual custom, or marriage ties. So more to cheer her up than voice his own complaints, Johnny said, "What the hell difference does it make if I can't sing?" Virginia's voice was annoyed. "Oh, Johnny, you're not a kid anymore. You're over 35. Why do you keep worrying about that silly singing stuff? You make more money as a producer anyhow." Johnny looked at her curiously and said, "I'm a singer. I love to sing. What's being old got to do with that?" Virginia was impatient. "I never liked your singing anyway. Now that you've shown you can make movies, I'm glad you can't sing anymore." They were both surprised when Johnny said with fury, "That's a fucking lousy thing to say." He was shaken. How could Virginia feel like that? How could she dislike him so much? Virginia smiled at his being hurt, and because it was so outrageous that he should be angry at her, she said, "How do you think I felt when all those girls came running after you because of the way you sang? How would you feel if I went ass naked down the street to get men running after me? That's what your singing was, and I used to wish you'd lose your voice and could never sing again. But that was before we got divorced." Johnny finished his drink. "You don't understand a thing. Not a damn thing." He went into the kitchen and dialed Nino's number. He quickly arranged for them both to go down to Palm Springs for the weekend and gave Nino the number of a girl to call, a real fresh young beauty he'd been meaning to get around to. "She'll have a friend for you," Johnny said. "I'll be at your place in an hour." Virginia gave him a cool goodbye when he left. He didn't give a damn. It was one of the few times he was angry with her. The hell with it. He'd just tear loose for the weekend and get all the poison out of his system. Sure enough, everything was fine down in Palm Springs. Johnny used his own house down there. It was always kept open and staffed this time of year. The two girls were young enough to be great fun and not too rapacious for some kind of favor. Some people came over to keep them company at the pool until supper time. Nino went to his room with his girl to get ready for supper and a quick bang while he was still warm from the sun. Johnny wasn't in the mood, so he sent his girl, a short, bandbox blonde named Tina, up to shower by herself. He never could make love to another woman after he'd had a fight with Virginia. He went into the glass-walled patio living room that held a piano. When singing with the band, he had fooled around with the piano just for laughs, so he could pick out a song in a fake, moonlight, soft ballad style. He sat down now and hummed along a bit with the piano, very softly, muttering a few words but not really singing. Before he knew it, Tina was in the living room making him a drink and sitting beside him at the piano. He played a few tunes and she hummed with him. He left her at the piano and went up to take his shower. In the shower, he sang short phrases, more like speaking. He got dressed and went back down. Tina was still alone. Nino was really working his girl over or getting drunk. Johnny sat down at the piano again while Tina wandered off outside to watch the pool. He started singing one of his old songs. There was no burning in his throat. The tones were coming out muted, but with proper body. He looked at the patio. Tina was still out there. The glass door was closed. She wouldn't hear him. For some reason, he didn't want anybody to hear him. He started off fresh on an old ballad that was his favorite. He sang full out as if he were singing in public, letting himself go, waiting for the familiar burning rasp in his throat, but there was none. He listened to his voice. It was different somehow, but he liked it. It was darker. It was a man's voice, not a kid's. Rich, he thought, dark rich. He finished the song, easing up, and sat there at the piano, thinking about it. Behind him, Nino said, "Not bad, old buddy, not bad at all." Johnny swiveled his body around. Nino was standing in the doorway, alone. His girl wasn't with him. Johnny was relieved. He didn't mind Nino hearing him. "Yeah," Johnny said, "let's get rid of those two broads. Send them home." Nino said, "You send them home. They're nice kids. I'm not going to hurt their feelings. Besides, I just banged mine twice. How would it look if I sent her away without even giving her dinner?" The hell with it, Johnny thought. Let the girls listen, even if he sounded lousy. He called up a band leader he knew in Palm Springs and asked them to send over a mandolin for Nino. The band leader protested.
"Hell, nobody plays a mandolin in California."
Johnny yelled, "Just get one." The house was loaded with recording equipment, and Johnny had the two girls work the turnoff and volumes. After they had dinner, Johnny went to work. He had Nino playing the mandolin as accompaniment and sang all his old songs. He sang them all the way out, not nursing his voice at all. His throat was fine. He felt that he could sing forever. In the months he had not been able to sing, he had often thought about singing, planned out how he would phrase lyrics differently now than as a kid. He had sung the songs in his head with more sophisticated variations of emphasis. Now he was doing it for real. Sometimes it would go wrong in the actual singing. Stuff that had sounded good when he heard it just in his head didn't work out when he tried it really singing out loud. Out loud, he thought. He wasn't listening to himself now. He was concentrating on performing. He fumbled a little on timing, but that was okay, just rusty. He had a metronome in his head that would never fail him. Just a little practice was all he needed. Finally, he stopped singing. Tina came over to him with eyes shining and gave him a long kiss.
"Now I know why Mother goes to all your movies," she said.
It was the wrong thing to say at any time except this. Johnny and Nino laughed. They played the feedback, and now Johnny could really listen to himself. His voice had changed a hell of a lot, but was still unquestionably the voice of Johnny Fontaine. It had become much richer and darker, as he had noticed before, but there was also the quality of a man singing rather than a boy. The voice had more true emotion, more character, and the technical part of his singing was far superior to anything he had ever done. It was nothing less than masterful. And if he was that good now, rusty as hell, how good would he be when he got in shape again? Johnny grinned at Nino. "Is that as good as I think it is?" Nino looked at his happy face thoughtfully.
"It's very damn good," he said. "Well, let's see how you sing tomorrow."
Johnny was hurt that Nino should be so downbeat.
"You son of a bitch, you know you can't sing like that. Don't worry about tomorrow. I feel great."
But he didn't sing any more that night. He and Nino took the girls to a party, and Tina spent the night in his bed, but he wasn't much good there. The girl was a little disappointed, but what the hell, he couldn't do everything all in one day, Johnny thought. He woke up in the morning with a sense of apprehension, with a vague terror that he had dreamed his voice had come back. Then, when he was sure it was not a dream, he got scared that his voice would be shot again. He went to the window and hummed a bit. Then he went down to the living room, still in his pajamas. He picked out a tune on the piano, and after a while tried singing with it. He sang mutedly, but there was no pain, no hoarseness in his throat, so he turned it on. The chords were true and rich. He didn't have to force it at all. Easy, easy, just pouring out. Johnny realized that the bad time was over. He had it all now. And it didn't matter a damn if he fell on his face with movies. It didn't matter if he couldn't get it up with Tina the night before. It didn't matter that Virginia would hate him being able to sing again.
For a moment, he had just one regret. If only his voice had come back to him while trying to sing for his daughters, how lovely that would have been. That would have been so lovely. The hotel nurse had come into the room wheeling a cart loaded with medication. Johnny got up and stared down at Nino, who was sleeping or maybe dying. He knew Nino wasn't jealous of his getting his voice back. He understood that Nino was only jealous because he was so happy about getting his voice back, that he cared so much about singing. For what was very obvious now was that Nino Valente didn't care enough about anything to make him want to stay alive.